This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food. Of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. It's Friday. It's 4 o'clock. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, in the studio with me. Welcome, George. How are
good
you
afternoon.
Today?
Good afternoon. I'm very good after yesterday's talk back.
I don't know about that.
No, it was a good talk back.
It was nice to hear from a different group of people. Absolutely. For a change. You know, yeah. That was during drive time. But
it's nice to see you being grilled.
I wasn't.
You weren't, yeah. And you did very well.
I was going to pass on the difficult questions to you.
Well, I Tai Chi the way back to you.
Okay. We'll come back and give you a little bit more details about our health event where Dr. George will be next Saturday, the 2nd of April. But first of all, today we're going to be discussing something really interesting. When I was reading it, it got me a little bit depressed, being a Friday and all of that. Mm. But something that needs to be talked about, and we don't usually talk about this. We've done palliative care for adults.
That's right.
Before, I can't remember her name.
Dr. Sylvia, and also from the Hospice Malaysia.
That's right. And today we have Ria Thomas. She's the chairperson of Angsana Care. And Angsana Care actually looks at pediatric palliative care and art therapy, actually. So we want to find out what they are going to be, what they are all about, and, you know, if they need our support, how can we actually support them? What is art and music therapy and all of that? How does that help with palliative care for children? Welcome to the show, Ria. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Meera.
Ria, tell us about Angsana Care. What is it? I mean, when was it founded? What was the objective of setting it up?
Actually, if you'd like to know who set it up, it was a Dr. Lo Yi Chin in University Hospital sometime around 2011. She ran a pilot program for about 3 years. And there was a very generous lady who funded that. But it came to a point where they saw its success and saw that it needed to go much further. It wasn't enough to just to isolate it to a small area. This meant that they needed more money, they needed to structure it, and this lady approached Datin Catherine Lai, who was already volunteering in several other things and didn't have the time. So she called me, and I was brought into a meeting with some doctors. I had no idea what I was going for.
Like how we pulled you in here.
So a little bit like that, yeah. Anyway, I sat through this meeting, thought, wonderful stuff, you know, and then suddenly I'm elected chair to an entity that hadn't been formed yet.
And why pediatric palliative care?
Because, you see, since 1995 or so, they brought in adult palliative care into Malaysia. And there's 26 hospices, wonderful people like Hospice Malaysia, Kasi Foundation, National Cancer Society, loads of other people that we admire. But all these places, all these associations and 7 hospitals actually took care of adult palliative care. It's only in about 2008 that pediatric palliative care was introduced.
We're only talking about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh,
16 years ago. 2008.
Yeah.
Yes, George.
Oh, okay.
You went to Chinese school, didn't you?
That's right. No, sorry. I was 18 years ago.
2008.
Yeah.
2008 is 8 years ago.
Is that it? Okay, sorry. Right, okay. My math's not right.
I thought I was having a blonde moment
it's
there.
It's called a senior moment for me.
Okay, right, okay. So coming back to this 2008, 8 years ago, right? Okay. I mean,
however, only in 2014 that a group of pediatricians managed to convince the Ministry of Health that this needed to be a subspecialty when they were training in pediatric palliative medicine. And we only foresee a formalized pediatric palliative medical care in the hospital in about 2017.
Wow. Okay. All right. That's We're very far behind. And what's the difference?
Well, we are working on it, so that's a good thing. And we were brought in, or asked, I was asked to start this, because doctors can only do so much. They don't have enough time in their hands to look after the children's emotional and mental well-being, right? So there was a void, without question. And what we've done is we actually engage professional therapists. So we have a music therapist, an art therapist, and a clinical psychologist who come in and work with the children. And being palliative care, it includes the whole family. So the services are extended to the parents particularly who are already grieving from the moment of diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between pediatric palliative care and adult palliative care?
Well, it's tailored to children, you know. So
it's not transferable just like, you know, from adult care to pediatric care that easily?
It is, but this is focused on children. And so, you know, the structure of the sessions is very childlike and child something children can understand and can
actually adapt to the needs of the children, presumably.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because...
But no, yeah. To their level of understanding. You see, a child needs to understand that when it's... You can't say to a child, so you should relax now.
Mm.
You know,
of
that
course.
Doesn't work. Mm. You've got to use play, for example. Mm. For them to be able to relate to this.
And this needs to be done by professional people who deal with children, because this is a very sensitive time for the children and the family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if you don't do it professionally, presumably you have induced more damage than good, really.
You could actually do severe damage, yeah, because you're now working with very fragile children who's sure. with fragile minds, you know.
How would you describe a child who's at the end stage of his or her life?
Most of them don't know. Some of them are very young children, and so they have no idea. All they know is the discomfort of being poked and prodded. They're living in unnatural circumstances in a hospital, you can imagine.
And what sort of age group are we talking about here?
Oh, we work with children from dot up to 19.
Right. Okay, so both real pediatric and adolescents.
Yes.
And what sort of kind of like diseases or conditions do you kind of come across? And then, you know, presumably it's not just cancer we're talking about here. We're talking about life-limiting diseases and, you know, and cancerous diseases.
That's right. There's cancer. We have organ failure, you know, liver, kidney. Then there's cystic fibrosis. We have Duchenne's, motor neuron diseases. And... Yeah.
And it's kind of heartbreaking to deal with a group of, I mean, both life-limiting and life-threatening diseases. Is that not right?
Well, yes, because they both seem quite hopeless, or at least life-threatening can be quite... They actually attempt treatment, but it can fail. Yeah. So
it's probably the one case where ignorance is bliss.
Well, yeah, because you know, earlier on you said that, you know, some children even don't have the concept of death.
Yep.
And then so the only thing that they realize is that all these white men, you know, the men in white coats are turning up and then using needles. And they don't even understand the benefit of having blood tests and that sort of thing. Because, you know, first of all, they don't even understand what's going on.
Yeah. So what do these children struggle with most?
Fear. I would say fear. And that would be our challenge, is to get beyond that fear, to gain their confidence. They are terribly frightened children. As I said, you know, it's such unnatural circumstances for them. They're not out in the fields playing, going to school, being normal kids. They're too fragile.
So the fear is not so much about dying, but the fear is more about...
The threat of the medical,
yeah,
you know, provisions.
The environment in which they're working.
That's right.
Okay. All right then. Very interesting. You know, when you talk about therapy that you're embarking on, as far as Angsana Care is concerned, to help support these children, what sort of therapy is this? I mean, I've read of art therapy, but what do you mean by art therapy?
Well, art therapy, actually, all three, well, particularly art therapy and music therapy, are great with the children because a lot of them don't have language to describe what they're going through. So often you find that, you know, with being able to sculpt a piece of clay or to draw something, we get the most amazing pictures. And these pictures are so descriptive. It's unbelievable. You can see the pain in some of those pictures. I wish I could show it to you here. But
so essentially, I mean, to describe it to a layman's term, art therapy is just using art form for the
expressing
the patients to express how they feel.
You see, when they express how they feel, whether it be it music, play, or art, they're releasing a lot of the fear and tension that they actually feel all the time. But beyond that, there's pain management with all of this. Because,
yes,
you know, one of that could be from distraction, from the pain. But there have been studies done by this university in the university hospitals in Ohio that even a single session of music therapy has shown to ease the pain in the child.
I mean, let's go back to the art therapy that you're talking about. Let's say a child who has got, you know, cystic fibrosis, undergoing life-limiting kind of situation in his life, and then lots and lots of tests being done. Obviously, a child is fearful, and drawing a picture of doom and gloom, because you're expecting a child to draw a picture of sunshine and then, you know, green field and that sort of thing, and obviously drawing a lot of fear, a lot of scary doctors and that sort of thing. And that is worrying, you know, for a child, because you know this child is fearful. And then obviously it's worrying for parents as well, because sometimes parents are a bit apprehensive when they see that, you know, strangers coming to handle their fearful children. And also you might have skeptical doctors, you know, who say, well, these is the sort of things that may or may not have any effect, but you're just wasting your time and that sort of thing. And that's when you come in to kind of array all fears. How do you handle that? I mean, you have the children to deal with.
If you have the parents, we actually, this is why a lot of our work is actually educating the parents that, you know, some you might have a parent saying, oh, leave my child to sleep, he needs to rest, you know, he's really not feeling good today. So we need to educate them that it's today when he's not feeling well is when we need to work with this child, because what you see is play and art and music, but it's actually very serious therapeutic work taking place.
On a psychological level.
Yeah.
In your experience, do children fear doctors?
Of course they do. Doctors are wonderful, friendly, and they attempt all they can to be cheerful around children particularly. But at the end of the day, you know, it's when that doctor's there that they get that prod, they get that poke.
Mira, I fear doctors.
Really?
No, you know, when I was
we're not talking about people your age.
That's what I do. When I was a kid, I had problems with, I have to own that on air now. It's like I had problems with bedwetting until, I don't know,
did
probably.
You really?
Yes, I did.
Is that why you're a urologist?
That's right.
Fix your own problems.
That's right, to solve my own problems. And then, you know, obviously, a lot of this is psychological. And then, you know, my parents, the only thing my parents decided was that something was wrong, physically wrong with me. And I was constantly taken to the doctors. And the only thing doctors could do for me was just gave me injections. And I was really, really absolutely fearful of doctors, because the only thing that my parents wanted were quick fix. And in fact, I was injected probably for the benefit of my parents, you know, just to array fears. So I decided one day to snatch the syringe and needle from the doctor and I stabbed him back.
Wow.
I was
no way, George.
I did.
Goodness me.
I know,
George.
Okay, right. Did I just say that on air?
Yes, you did.
I think we need a quick commercial break.
We do. We'll come back and find out more about the families. And we always talk about the patient itself. What about the families? I mean, from the time a child is diagnosed, it's a long journey to where they are, you know, at end stage of their life. If you have a question for Rhea or even Dr. George, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivisodhi. In the studio with us, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and we have Rhea Thomas, who is the chairperson of Angsana Care. Angsana Care actually deals with children with pediatric palliative care and as well as art therapy to help them through the end stages of their life. As you know, it's not as all doom and gloom as it sounds, Rhea, isn't it? How do you cope with that on a daily basis?
How do I cope with it personally?
Yes.
Well, yes. You have. I must admit, initially, I used to think, "Oh goodness, this is so depressing and so upsetting to go in and see these children and know that you know they're end of life, a lot of them." But you know, we put a spin on that. Now we know. Yes, a lot of them may not be around for very much longer, but we look at what we can do to make them happy, bring out smiles, see the parents looking a little more relieved. And that's really what we're all about in the end.
Mm-hmm. What about the doctors? Have they seen a difference in how they're able to manage the children easier because of the therapy?
We have a lovely story where one of the doctors, I can't tell you what they call this little child because
confidentiality.
In its name, okay, but you know, because name. It was such a worrying child.
Yeah.
They could never deal with this little girl. You know, she was unmanageable. She'd be screaming and
sounded like me when I was a kid.
Yeah, okay. maybe even worse.
No, yeah, okay.
But with a few sessions, we began to find the doctor, sorry, came back to us and said that, you know, this child now looks at him and says, "Okay, come on, let's go."
Oh, after the therapy.
Calming down, basically. It makes them calmer, a little more able to accept all that's going on around them. Sometimes we use it as a carrot. You know, we do occasionally say, right, and if you come back, we'll give you another session, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
is it costly to get people to come and carry out this service?
Yes, it is costly, but it's free of charge to the patients, completely free of charge to the hospital, in fact. It costs us a fair bit, and we obviously look for funds for that continually, because we're hiring highly professional and experienced therapists and clinical psychologists.
And that's important, really.
That
clearly.
Is very important. Yeah.
You need to be trained, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, we have James. You have a question.
Afternoon, James.
Yes, good afternoon, James. My question is very simple, actually. I'm just curious, besides therapy that you mentioned, art and music and all that, what else can, those professionals do? And the other thing is this, don't you think that the environment is equally important, familiar environment, not clinical environment, for example? All right? Thanks, sir.
Okay, bye. James, thank you. Go ahead.
Well, you know, what James pointed out, it's quite interesting because you have play therapists, you have music therapists, and also psychologists. Presumably, there's a lot more they can do.
What else can you actually do besides this to help relieve these children?
On our part, we actually have group sessions by highly skilled volunteers. And that's actually a fun session for the kids. And they love it. They can't wait to go for the next one because it's a group of children, you know, seemingly like in school, together doing things, laughing, playing. These are the ones, obviously, who are a little better and can come and actually join the group.
What about taking them out of the environment, as James was saying? Can you take them out of a clinical setting and put them in an entirely different environment?
Because after all, it is a clinic or a hospital.
It is a hospital. We have a program called The Little Wish. Now, in this program, sometimes one of the wishes that come up is for a trip to KL Aquaria or to a restaurant or... Well, the movie hasn't come up yet. We're just waiting for that. But it's a very, very involved process because we require two doctors and several volunteers to follow the family because this is, remember, a very, very sick child.
Yeah. I mean, presumably what James was getting at is the most familiar place is home. You know, sometimes there are home services. I mean, presumably, you know, at GHKL, you have some patients coming all the way from Batu Pahat or from, you know, Kota Bharu. And would Angsana Care consider actually reaching out to these poor children, you know, at their home familiar places like home?
It would be wonderful if we could do that. It would be wonderful. We can. Currently, we haven't got the funding to see all the children that we'd like to see, or our therapists to see all the children that they want to see within the hospital premises. So to be able to go out requires a lot more than what we are set up for at the moment.
And at the moment, Angsana Care works with the KL Hospital?
With the Pediatric Institute of the KL Hospital.
Yeah, I just saw a new building. They have an entirely new building now, don't they?
We're really looking forward to that. We will be.
You'll be based there.
Oh, you haven't moved yet?
The Institute hasn't moved as yet.
Okay. So do you have plans to, you know, extend the service to other hospitals as well?
Well, that is another dream. Big dream that we have. Right?
Well, I don't see why it should be a dream at all, George. Don't you think?
Many people ask me what I'm talking about today. I mentioned this. And at the end of the day, this is something that I feel very close to my heart because, you know, I got involved in Angsana Care. I'm a member of this charity. Because I believe in two things. Number one, we have a lot of focus. I mean, earlier on, Ria pointed out that the care for pediatric, it's always kind of like a site care of adult care, you know, because majority of the time, like yesterday, we had a phone call from somebody who said, look, you know, my son has got these allergy problems and things. But most of the time, we're talking about adults. And then there's clearly a neglected area in pediatric care. Therefore, I felt a bit strongly about this. And the other thing is that what it is all about is building trust with a child. And then that, I think, a lot of time as doctor, we don't really spend enough time to do. And we will leave it to the professionals who help us. And therefore, I think this is an important part of this organization, is that they have professional psychologists, professional music therapists and art therapists and play therapists. Because sometimes as doctor myself, I think I do more damage whenever I don't focus too much time to build that trust with a child. I see children in my clinic, but I genuinely feel that my nurse did a lot more of that calming down and build that trust before they come and see me. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's important. And the last thing I want to do is that Ria and Angsana Care makes the whole doom and gloom brighter, because the whole play, the art and everything makes it a kind of like a cheerful place for the child. And that's the kind of glimpse of hope that they have. And therefore, I don't want today to be kind of like, you know, doom and gloom about palliative care in children. I just want to see what creative work that they do to make it a happy place for the children.
Well, to start with, the bright side is Angsana Care exists and that the children actually have access to such therapy.
And
that
in
itself, is a really good sign.
Let me add another little bright side to your side.
Yeah.
Actually, the children's rooms, I mean, their wards now, and around many children's beds are their artwork.
Mm.
So the environment, when James is talking about changing the environment, no, we can't take it home, but we can try and bring home to the hospital.
Right.
Which is the artwork, and some of them write poetry. All of this is now actually pasted up around their beds, and the wards are starting to look happy and cheerful.
Yeah, I mean, the other children, the new children, will actually see all these the previous artworks and then poetry and things like that from other kids, and they know there's almost a testimony that, you know, previous kids were well treated.
Daniel is asking, and I'm sure this is I'm not sure if you're able to answer this, but he's wondering if this sort of care is covered by normal medical insurance.
In fact, is it completely free of charge, really?
Yeah, we don't charge at all.
Yep. So then comes the question, how do you fund yourselves?
Well, we look to the public for individual funding. We go to corporates. We look at sponsorship. We are not supported by any government grants, and nor are we affiliated in any way to...
Not even tax-free status, I hear.
No, we don't have tax-free status, exemption. So don't expect that when you give us money. Not yet.
But you're fighting for that. Yes, okay. Right, yes. I mean, you've been in existence for nearly a year.
Well, we've just completed a year.
All right, congratulations.
Thank you. Completed a year.
So during this time, I mean, so how much has it cost the organization to provide these three professionals and also the the regular cares that you provide to the children? And how many children have you provided service to?
Well, in the last 6 months, we've seen about 280 individual cases.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh. And many, many more group sessions. I couldn't give you the numbers, but, you know, we see anything between 8 and 12 kids. Sometimes it dwindles to 4 and 6, depending on the state of the kids. But, yeah, we see a lot of children in the hospitals.
And therapists come, do they volunteer or are they paid?
The therapists are paid. We have to pay them because it is their livelihood and we want them to do the best work they can do. So,
so we'd like to pay them anyway. Yeah, you got a staff of a psychologist.
Yeah.
And then and a...
Music therapist and an art therapist.
And these are trained professionals.
These are trained professionals with degrees in these fields.
Okay. Yes. Do you want more people to come and join you?
If we can afford it, we would love all that we can get. Yes, because there's more children than we can certainly manage in the hospitals. There's enormous numbers coming in every day.
Okay. Do you complement a hospice service in any way?
That's a great question.
The hospice service.
Because presumably hospice service will include pain management. I know the art therapy will reduce the pain killers requirements and that sort of things, but they still need painkillers, they still need hospice, they still need kind of like a management in terms of the improvement quality of life and that sort of things. How do you complement each other whenever, you know, the art therapy and music therapy comes into play with hospice services?
Well, I think the studies made about how it actually helps with pain. All three therapies actually help with pain, mainly by distraction, of course. But more than that, you know, it allows them to forget the negativity in their life and gives them a little while when they're doing something.
It's temporary.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm not going to deny that. Yeah. It's mostly temporary, but it's there. We do have pain management for sure using these therapies.
Okay. We have a question here. How do you change expectations of a child with palliative care of what fun will look like? Because it might be an unrealistic of them to run around outdoors. How do you make it as realistic as possible indoors? And in the environment in which they're in.
Well, if you take one of our music sessions, they have drums, they have castanets, they have... I'd say that's fun. They're having a lot of fun. And, you know, one child is getting a private session, their children in the ward coming around asking to join in.
From the sound here, you make it sound like, you know, that is quite a fun place for many children.
It is. And
like,
children really don't have a lot of expectations. They're not like the adults.
That's right.
You know, it's just little things that make them so happy.
That's right. They're not skeptical and they're not critical.
And it's not like, you know, the typical kind of GP clinic that we have one children's corner there. We have some really knackered toys there. That's right. This sounded like, you know, you have proper, musical instruments and then someone is teaching them about poetry. The other one is doing clays, you know, management. It sounds like a lot of fun plays. And it sounds like very expensive as well. Yeah.
To fund.
Yeah, so exactly. So,
yes,
I mean,
it is.
Which leads me to Suresh Raj is asking, how do we donate?
Now, we have a website, www.angsanacare.org. O-R-G. There's a link there that will give you information on how to donate.
Okay. I mean, early
on. We would
on,
love anything.
Any donations.
Any kind of donation. You can do it on a monthly basis. You can give us a one-off. We appreciate every little bit that comes in because it all adds up.
And what would that donation go to apart from the staff? I mean, how have you sustained yourself in the first anniversary and where do you get the donation from? And also when the general public from Klang Valley and beyond donating, and what sort of services do you plan to provide this?
As in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. We would love to start training. And we're already in the planning stages for this. We want to train more hospitals throughout Malaysia to do the same thing that we're doing in the Pediatric Institute.
Mm-hmm.
This, of course, is going to require a lot more trained music therapists, play therapists, and art therapists in Malaysia. There's only a handful, and they're very hard to find.
Okay, so then it needs to be a transfer of knowledge, know-how as such. Families, we've missed out the families. You are treating the child. What about the family?
Well, palliative care per se includes the whole family. It requires that you take into consideration the parents, the siblings, the caregivers around this child, and that's exactly what we do. So when our therapist goes in, and let's say the child might be asleep, but we have a very distressed mother sitting there, the therapist just sits there and works with the parent. We have amazing stuff coming out from these parents as well. You should see the artwork, the music.
Wow.
Sometimes all they want is for the music therapist to just play a song. Like there was a child who was in coma, and the mother knew the songs that the child really liked to hear before. So it gave us so much peace just to hear these songs being played for this child, to the child, you know. It can sometimes be very simple things. Then, of course, we have a counsellor. The clinical psychologist actually spends a lot of time with these parents who, as you know, are grieving from the moment the child, they know that the child is this ill.
Mm. Is there support for the family post, after the child has, you know, gone?
Well, there's another dream. One day we will have enough money and we will begin bereavement therapy, which actually, again, as I said, begins long before the child is deceased. This is for the whole family, and we expect that, you know, counseling should go on. If it requires that they need an art therapist, and an art therapist, if it's a music therapist that's going to help them, then that's what they will get.
Okay. All right, then. So, any other questions, George?
No, I mean, I really think this is great work that, you know, Angsana Care is doing. Obviously, at the moment, it's confined to Klang Valley. I really think it's good that you have plans to train more people and then actually replicate a lot of services that you have. And I think, you know, earlier on, we pointed out that art therapy is clearly sometimes calm the children down, reduces the need for pain relief, and also in many ways it's therapeutic for them to accept and to gain trust with the adults. So I think in a Malaysian setting, we have many, many NGOs set up, and it's difficult to sustain that. And so I know you face a challenge of resources is the main challenge. Yeah. How do you see Angsana Care sustained for the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, we're approaching a number of foundations and corporates, and that's where we hope to get the most funding. People have been wonderful. I mean, to trust us and believe in us and in the work that we do and the money that they send in, we have no words, you know, in how to express our gratitude. And so also with the corporates who've funded us, like we have Siemens, for example, and BAC, because Asia College, and these are people who support us from the get-go.
Mm.
It helps that we have doctors that speak up for us. You know, we've got letters from them to say what a great job we're doing and how appreciative they are of us. Our doctors were skeptical, I must say. Some of them were when we first came in. It's there on the website if you go and look at it. They felt that we might just be another group that just comes in and dies out in no time. Everybody comes in to do great work, but, you know, some better than the others. And I'm glad to say we fit into that latter category. Yeah.
You have another dream, I've left this out, to be medically equipped, have a holiday home.
Yes, now when we're counting dreams, this is probably the very last one. We would have to be very, very well to do. But, you know, as luxurious an idea as that sounds, you've got to understand, if you put yourself into this position, you know, let's say you know you have a family member that's eventually going to go, you know, and maybe sooner than you think. Mm-hmm. One of the nicest things you can do for yourself and your family is to create some lovely memories and some beautiful time together. To do that, it would be wonderful if we could have a holiday home with a mobile, you know, medical van to take you there, and doctors, nurses, you know, on hand, so that this child, say if it was a beach house, for example, parents have taken leave, they don't have to worry about work, children are away from school, so the family is actually spending very intense quality time together. And this is definitely something we think is important, but sure, we have other priorities before that.
Okay. Another question, how does one volunteer to help Aung San Suu Kyi?
We have a link on our website again, www.aungsanakyi.org. Okay.
Would you encourage volunteers? Because, you know, these are very fragile children.
So we need volunteers when, let's say, we give a birthday party. Now, we do a birthday party once a month or once in 2 months for every child that has a birthday in those months. We need birthday cakes, we need jelly, you know, we need somebody to transport these things. This is when we need volunteers. And then sometimes we might have a trip. Say we do Kale Aquaria. Often, well, once in a way, the doctors have actually dangled this carrot in front of a child who needs a treatment that the child's not volunteering to go into. The doctor might suggest, look, if you do this and after your whole course, we can set up a trip to the Kale Aquaria for you. Would you like that? And that's when we come in. Now, that fits under our A Little Wish program. Now, at this point, we need volunteers to drive cars because it's a whole team that's going. To manage the entire family, you know, sometimes the doctors need a quiet word to talk to the child. For example, we had one child who was afraid of death. And the doctors wanted quiet time out of the hospital, away from the family, to speak to this patient. Volunteers are then needed to distract the rest of the family.
Okay, so a lot that can be done.
That's right. Okay. I mean, to my last kind of like an interesting and, you know, fun thing that I would like to kind of contribute or ask is that a lot of us who've got children who've grown up, you know, like, you know, like I've got a 14 and 16-year-old. We have a lot of kind of toys at home and like you know, for example, dollhouses and things that which think or musical instrument we think might be useful. Would you accept that sort of like things for the kids?
We would love that stuff.
Yeah, because those would be the easier things for us to do, right?
Yeah.
The books and everything.
We would love that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if we have got those things, I mean, how do we contribute towards Aung San Suu Kyi?
Actually, you can email, if you go to the website again, can I say this one
yes,
last
you
time?
Can.
www.aungsanakyi.org. Now, if you go to our website, you'll be able to email us and suggest what you have, and you know, then we can work on how we.
And the sort of things that you have been receiving were like books?
Books and toys, yes. We've got some stuff.
And some musical instruments.
Musical instruments are always useful, but sometimes difficult because it's fine when the therapist is there, but it can cause a lot of noise and distraction.
And that's when the doctor is kind of like regretted.
Can you get rid of these Aung San Suu Kyi people?
However, I would like to say that we exist purely because of these doctors. I mean,
absolutely.
From the get-go, they advised us. They've introduced us to staff. They've shown us the way. They welcome us. But most importantly, they refer their patients to us. We don't seek our own patients in the hospital. The doctors refer their patients to us. And so do the nurses, actually.
Okay. Just speaking about the volunteers, just before we end the show, what sort of mental state should we be in to be a volunteer? Because right now I'm thinking, I don't think I'll be able to be a volunteer. But does it take stepping out of your comfort zone and doing it and eventually learning how to be more emotionally resilient when it comes to dealing with children like these?
Absolutely, absolutely. I have a personal story here. I used to volunteer with another group and we went into the pediatric oncology ward to give them a Christmas party or something. I was hopeless. I stood outside and I wept the entire time until one of my team came and said, "Will you just go home?"
Yep.
You know, and then I realized it's all fine to stand there and cry and say, I can't do this, it's too painful, it's too hard. But what purpose have you served in this case? None, you know. So I took a hold of myself when this thing came, you know, this project was handed to me. And as I said earlier, I thought, okay, right, this is going to happen. Let's make something good and happy out of this. Let's give these children more smiles. That's the best you can do. So with that in mind, you arm yourself with more courage and strength.
Great.
Lessons learned, George.
Absolutely, yeah.
Step out of your comfort zone.
That's right.
Okay, it was a pleasure having you on, actually, Ria. Would you have a message for our listeners? Donate, volunteer, give us your staff, anything.
Yes, donate. Donate. Anything you can donate, and every time you donate, we are as grateful.
Okay, George.
I mean, Ria, I really think I you know, we've known each other for a while, but however, I never really realized the whole story. I really appreciate you sharing your journey and your story about how you came across this and actually took this on. I really think you are an unsung hero.
Really. Oh, thank you very much for joining us today. If you'd like to get in touch with the organization, the website again is angsanacare.org. That was Ria Thomas, chairperson of Angsana Care, as well as Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.